Off the Ball on News Talk 106 to 108.
I'm prepared to do anything I can.
Well,
to
do it then.
Again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
Oh, it wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Okay, we're starting the football show early because Kev's in and Kenny's in. Second half's just started. It's still nil all at the Nou Camp. Monaco are 2-0 up on Borussia Dortmund. We haven't really talked, Kev, about the second goal. The first, obviously, we mentioned.
Yeah.
The boy's good. That's his 16th in 16 games.
16, I think we're saying, yeah.
He's
fabulous run. He looks
he's a phenomenal talent.
Real talent. Kenny just talking about before, the French...
We're talking about Mbappe, obviously.
Mbappe, the French squad at the moment, littered with so much talent up front, particularly up front. There's players that can't get into the squad, but Mbappe's certainly come onto the scene now. He looks a hell of a talent. And the goal was manufactured down the left-hand side again. Our boy Mendy that we like to talk about, but he's the one that got himself into a wide area. He played a good ball in centrally, laid back out. This time it was Thomas Lamar. Great crossing. The movement from Falcao, superb. Pulls away from the defender, gets across him, and downward header, and it is 2-0 Monaco, and Monaco good value for it.
Is he pretty much back to his best, or is he still a few percentage points
off? He looks to me like he's back to his best, yeah, he is.
You're not sure, Kenny?
Kenny's not having
I know. I understand what Kev's saying, but he'll never really at his best.
The explosive.
He was in an Atletico Madrid jersey, yeah. Just hasn't got that pace to burn and just get away from that real dynamic burst over 10, 15 yards. But his game has come back, and he's always been a very intelligent operator.
Movement, Ken, isn't he?
Movement, quality of his finishing, as we saw it even in Manchester, Kev, you mentioned it. The little dink for his goal over there was absolutely phenomenal finish. But no, he'll never be the player he was. But he's found his form. He's found his confidence, which is what he needed. He needed to play again. He needed to kind of rediscover himself again. He wasn't getting that in England. Wasn't getting enough game time. But he certainly got it here, and they're reaping the rewards.
Meanwhile, in the Nou Camp, what kind of game have we had? Second half just started, no score yet. Any big chances?
No, not really. Messi had a decent enough chance in the first half. He just dragged his shot wide. Higuain had a good chance. I wouldn't say good half chance. It was a good movement from him, got himself into a good area. But it's been quite evenly matched, really. Most of the play has been quite central, and Juve doing a job on them, really. They're seeing it through, they're seeing any tough spells that they're having through.
They're frenetic. To be honest with you, a little bit disappointed. Probably a little bit similar to performance against PSG, in all honesty, but just a little bit more organised. Juventus, a little bit more calm in the defending. A couple of times they looked as if they could get in. Barcelona, invariably it's been Benucci and Chiellini sliding across and dealing with the danger. And I just think if Juventus take a bit more care, Kev, they've had some good possession, maybe 10, 15 yards inside the Barcelona half, just take a little bit more care with their final pass, they could get in very easily, get
that
goal.
Now Cuadrado's in on the angle. Cuadrado drags his shot wide. Decent enough chance. So again, it was breakaway from a corner. So that's where they're getting a lot of joy from that.
Perfect evening really for Juventus so far. People really enjoyed the quiz. And you're cribbing about it.
Don't try and dig yourself out, Joe.
You're not happy about it.
Horrendous.
I didn't set the questions.
You've set the bar well low. Magnuson's up there and you're right down the bottom.
Who set that? Who set the question on Brian's middle name and got it wrong?
I don't know.
That was horrible. That was horrible.
actually was horrible.
What's his missus name? For God's sake. What's his missus name?
Are you not happy about that?
No. I'm not. Kev, you were between us. You were cringing at that one, weren't you?
I was a little bit here, but I know that you like those celebrity magazines, Ken. I know that you're into all those. So,
I actually knew.
It's all about Towie, and it's about these celebrity magazines. You've already put that out there.
The only way is Essex.
I didn't set the questions, but I mean, I'm part of the team, so I'm genuinely sorry if you're not
accept
happy with that question.
Share the responsibility,
Joe.
Don't look to point the finger at the lads behind it.
If you're genuinely, if you're genuinely upset, I'm sorry. There was no offence intended, Kenny.
I thought we were going back old school, question of sport. It was actually a bit nostalgic looking forward to it.
It was sweet Irish captains.
It was like Mr. and Mrs. More Mr. and Mrs, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the question point. Of sport. That was the point. That was the selling point. It was you two against each other. So we had to make it a bit quirky.
Never make a good salesman, I tell you that. That's a selling point.
The single funniest slot I've ever heard on radio, says Ken in Waterford. Hysterical. There you go.
Ken needs to get out a bit more, but I'll be honest, he needs to get out of the house a bit more.
Nick says, Jesus, lads, what a laugh. I'm pissing myself here. Kenny's gas. Yeah. So there you go. Look, everyone enjoyed it. You just need to acknowledge it was fine.
Sometimes, Ken, you got to lighten up. I've told you that many a time.
It's the silent majority I'm worried about. The silent majority that are in their houses.
They switched off ages ago.
Just thinking, oh my God, that's horrible.
Will you stop? It's far from horrible. So we've plenty to talk about. Manchester United, Chelsea, I want to get your thoughts on the weekend. Mm. Will we do, Kev, you can decide, will we talk Man U Chelsea or are we getting Kenny's Lions team?
Oh, you've got to start with the Lions team. Okay. We might as well get it out there early, haven't we?
Let's get it out early. We were going to raise the bar.
Yeah, so let's get Kenny's Lions team. We've got to get that out early, yeah. It's been a big day.
All right.
Big day.
So the Lions squad was named today, as you know. We've talked about that with the aforementioned Brian O'Driscoll and Keith Wood and Jerry Thornley. And we said to Kenny, we would like you for the day that's in it to give us your starting XI, starting 11 Lions, the home countries, Kenny.
Obviously, want to put on record, I was bullied into this as well.
You have an envelope there. You sealed it so no one could check in advance.
Biggest envelope I've ever seen. It's got to be.
So give us your thought process on this. What system did you go? What were you thinking?
Yeah, Kevin insisted it had to be a 4-4-2, but yeah,
British
I wasn't
football.
Happy with that. So I've deviated towards a 4-3-3 just to accommodate. Okay.
All right,
well, just
on.
Best That's compliments
fine.
To the players.
That's fine. I'm interested. So Kenny's Lions team. Who's
this
in goal?
This is obviously home nations, etc., etc.
England,
this-
Ireland.
Yeah, yeah.
Scotland, Wales.
Do you want me to give you the team? I won't talk you through it.
Let me just through certain bits. Give us the goalkeeper.
No, I'm going to give you the whole team.
Don't
then you
rush
can bounce back
it.
At me.
No, it's
yeah,
radio.
Yeah. Don't try and bully me again, Joe. I'm going to give you the team.
It's radio.
4-3-3.
Just take your time with it. Let us come in.
Yeah. You're not asking me. You're telling me, aren't you?
A little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
goalkeeper.
Was this an easy decision?
No.
Why?
Just I didn't think there was a standout goalkeeper. I think you could have made an argument for 3 or 4.
Okay.
I've leaned towards Joe Hart.
Why?
By a whisker.
Why Hart
well,
and not Hennessy?
Well, exactly. Well, that's my whole point. There's 3 or 4 of them, you could throw a blanket over them. Still think Joe Hart for me, just in terms of presence.
Back.
Just in terms of presence and maybe big saves or big moments. I still think he's capable. So, yeah, I'll give him the edge.
Okay. Joe Hart and goal.
Oh, 2-1. Sorry, Dortmund have just got one back against Monaco as well.
Sorry. Interesting.
Yeah.
Did you see? Oh, it's Marco Royce who scored.
More interesting than what I was talking about.
Marco Royce
yeah,
has just
finish.
Scored.
Lovely finish, actually.
Describe it.
He's just coming in from the left-hand side. He gets himself free. He's about 6 yards out, but it's just he takes it on the volley, top corner, finishes it really well.
Monaco have almost gone and scored the other end.
Yeah. Mbappe again. Ridiculous. Upper body strength. People like him to Henry, but Henry never had that kind of upper body strength at that age. 18.
He reminds
remember?
Me of Trezeguet, you know. Honestly, I think he's more Trezeguet.
He's more, more dynamic though, Kev, even quicker than him.
Brilliant though, isn't he?
He's beaten about 2 or 3 men there in the area.
Strong.
He's got a chance, that kid.
Yeah.
I presume clubs.
He has, Ken.
I presume the big clubs now will snap him up this summer. Don't let someone else nick in and get him first.
I don't think so.
No.
I think they'll keep him. I think Monaco will be selective in terms of the players who they let go. If anything, I think the two full-backs, Sidibe and Mendy, will be the first two out the door to get big money for them. And they try and keep hold of this young for at least for another 1-2 years.
Well, Torres starting tonight, he's actually looked very good at right-back. So I could see maybe Sidibe going, definitely. And then they've still got a ready-made replacement in there anyway.
Far easier to replace a full-back, as you know, Kev, rather than that type of centre-forward. Few and far between players of his quality, even at that young age. And it's not as if he's losing value. His value is only going to increase. Kev over the next couple of years anyway, the way he's going, there's more to come from him, so I wouldn't imagine they'd be in any rush to sell him. It's just his contract really. If they got him on a long contract, I think he'd stay there.
We'll get on to the weekend's game. I know you both have thoughts on Chelsea Manchester United as Suarez is down injured waving at the bench. We'll see if he's okay. We started with your Lions team for the day that was in it.
I've got to quicken this up.
No,
even I'm falling asleep. I've mentioned Joe Hart. I'm going to give him me back four. Seamus Coleman,
okay,
Michael Keane, Johnny Evans and Danny Rose for Tottenham. Come on then, what have you got? Come back.
Johnny Evans.
Johnny Evans for me, highly underrated.
Very good season. Brilliant season, in fact. I think United
made a mistake. Was Van Gaal let him go?
Yeah.
He was having a few injury problems at United at the time. They shoved him out the door. Very little said about it, but I think it was a mistake.
Right.
Would you have Johnny Evans in your...
There must be someone. The great institution of English and Irish centre-halves falling that short.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. You've got John Stones, you've got Cahill, you've got Smalling, you've got Jones.
I take him ahead of them all.
I'm wanting to disagree with something that Kenny said. I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that.
And you like Michael Keane?
I like Michael Keane a lot. I think he's a good defender, defends his box well, does the simple things. That's why I give him the edge over John Stones. For me, defensively, he's been better this season. Mightn't have as many dragbacks as John Stone.
Do you know
his delivery as well, his ball from back to front as well, Kenny, very good.
He is. I think his quality is very good. I wouldn't disagree with that with the season that he's had. I just wonder, if you made that step up and he played in a City team, if he played in an Arsenal team, and you have to be a bit more open and expansive. That's why we talk about this centre-half pairing that's for Juventus tonight. They do a job centrally. They stay between the width of the goal. Very rarely will they play ultra-wide. They will never want to get caught out. So I think if you're a Man City manager and you're thinking, yeah, let's go and sign the best centre-half in Europe, sign Bonucci. Would Bonucci play in a City team and play the same way he does there? No, he wouldn't, because he wouldn't be asked to do that. I think the
answer to that, Kev, is have a look at the system that you're playing, how you're setting your team up defensively.
I'm with you.
Danny Rose will accept. Coleman will take. So Joe Hart, Seamus Coleman, Keane and Evans, Danny Rose. Give us your three midfielders.
Yeah, I'm going with a holding midfield and two advanced midfielders, the traditional number 6 and 2-8 for me. This was a toss-up for me in that holding midfield position between Eric Dier, Jordan Henderson. I've gone with Dier. He's had a poor first half of the season.
I don't like Dier.
He's picked up recently, but I think he's a fine player. He's shown me enough over the past couple of years. I think he's an excellent all-round player. He can drop in between the two centre-halves very easily, kind of very versatile. Good defensive mindset, and his distribution, I think, is excellent. So you're not feeling Dier?
I'm not a fan of Dier. I'm not. I don't think in Tottenham's best 11, when everybody's fit, Dier doesn't get in that side.
Right.
No.
Barcelona blazed a big chance over the bar there. He played the back four.
Kyle Walker. Yeah,
who do you know? Who's ahead of him? Who's the better midfield player?
He's better two midfielders than Dembele and Wanyama.
Yeah.
They play ahead of him.
But bearing in mind, Dembele can't get into this an Ireland team. This is no, a home nations team. What I'm asking is who gets in ahead of him in your team? Who's a better player? That's what I'm saying. I had that. Jordan Henderson, for me, he's kind of reinvented himself a little bit in terms of that holding midfield position. Mm. I'm a big fan of his Henderson. So for me, it was a toss-up between them two on that holding midfield position.
You're not going to make a case for Harry Arthur, I presume? It's too soon.
No, well, you can't. Harry Arthur is not a holding centre midfield player. Harry Arthur is a number 8 for me. He's an advanced midfield player. I don't quite get the Harry Arthur kind of all action centre midfield player. I think he's very good in the opposition half. The closer he gets to the opposition penalty box,
the more
effective he is. I don't think defensively he's the strongest part of his game. No.
James McCarthy's not in Dier's level.
I think that's the thing. You can kind of poo-poo dismiss those two, but when I throw it out, give me a better player.
Henderson and Dier.
Okay. Mm. Right, give me your 2-8s.
Dele Alli and Adam Lallana. These are the only positions I'm looking at. Robbie Brady, in terms of making an argument, how could he get into this team? It'd be as a number 8 for me. I still think potentially it's Robbie's best position. Martin's played him there. I've laid him and Jeff Hendrick at times behind a holding midfielder, kind of Glenn and James McCarthy. I like that kind of setup that we have. But for me, Lallana and Alli at this moment in time, certainly Alli for me is head and shoulders. Alli for me could develop into the most complete player of his generation. I think he's on his way, and probably the best Tottenham player of all time. And at 19 years of age, that's an incredible thing to say. But for me, he's on his way. I mean, I know a lot of people talk about Harry Kane, how exceptional he is, and of course, different type of player, Alli. But in terms of his all-round game, I think he could very well be one of the best English players of potentially of all time. I think he's going to be that good.
It's a big call, but
wow.
He's been great.
I've seen him play orthodox central midfield, Kev. Seen him play as a 10. I'm talking about him as an 8 playing on the inside. He's played wide of a 3. He could play anywhere. He's scoring goal. He runs the channels. He can have it on the half turn.
He can link
play up. Yeah, bit of aggression, character traits, everything.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that.
So that's me midfield 3.
No pressure though, Dele Alli.
No. I think he can deal with it. From I like what I hear when he was interviewed in terms of the personality as well. And then a front three of Raheem Sterling right, Gareth Bale left, and Harry Kane down the middle. Now again,
is there no one better than Raheem Sterling?
We've got to try and make an argument for someone now, haven't we? Off the top of our heads.
Did you consider anyone else there? Bale and Kane, we can't argue with.
I didn't consider. Too many, to be honest with you. Like I said, there's a couple of those names. That's why it's difficult. A couple of those names, I understand people say, oh, I'm not having him. That's not a way. But if you've got to throw another name, well, who's better? It's not easy, is it?
There's no one really within England side, is there? Is there anyone within England side you could play Lallana a bit further forward and maybe incorporate in the midfield? Probably not. Like anybody?
Johnny Walters isn't going to be a
Would you not make an argument to try to get someone from Northern Ireland in? Maybe a Stephen Davis, if you're going to try and get somebody in from up there.
He's not at Sterling's level, though.
No,
is he?
I'm with you.
Stephen Davis plays one of those centre, one of those threes. Like, and I'm a big fan of Stephen Davis, but like I said, I mean, Alli and Alli doesn't get them out of the team. As a holding midfield player, more of an all round player, Davis for me.
I'll tell you who's got a chance. Well, it's Scotland, that it's Tierney, the lad at Celtic. I think he's got a chance potentially in 2 or 3 years where you could be talking about him in the bracket of a Danny Rose or wherever he would be, but. probably not yet. No, he's not at that level, no.
And that's the sad thing. Scottish, I mean, Scotland is like a wasteland at the moment. That's a sad thing to say. You know what I mean? Traditionally, always had a couple in the mix, centre halves in particular, where they're really kind of struggling at the moment. But no, for me, that's it.
Joe Art and goals, Seamus Coleman, Keenan Evans, Rose, Dyer, then you've Dele Alli and Lallana, Sterling, Kane and Bale.
And that's a kind of a real attacking edge to that team. Like Alli and Lallana get themselves, look at that front five, that front three and them. Fullbacks get themselves involved as well. And what I like about the two fullbacks, which is important to me as well, they can defend as well. The defensive side of Seamus' game, last couple of years, outstanding. Danny Rose as well is a good defender as well.
How would this team do in a World Cup?
Well, World Cup winners. But with me managing it, clearly.
Well, that is the other question. It looks like a serious team.
I think it's a balance. Like I said, Dora, for me, first half of the season, his physical levels have really dropped. Looks to me as if he had too much football, but I've seen enough previously and of late suggests for me he's still potentially. I like that, just holding the centre of that pitch. He can drop in between the two centre-halves as well. Nice counterbalance to Alli and Lallana. And what I like about Alli and Lallana, as efficient as they are going into the opposition half and how dangerous they are, they'll drop back in defensively, do a shift as well for you.
There's a text in, just in from the
Here we go. Oh yeah, you're confident, aren't you? You're confident with this. You're confident.
You need something
to rescue your night, Joe. Big time. Come on then.
You can tell.
Drop it on me. Drop the bomb.
He's got to in place of Raheem Sterling. That's what he's. That's why he's so
buzzing.
Excited.
He's absolutely buzzing. Look, he's loving himself over there. Look, he's gonna milk it. He's gonna milk it now. Go on. Say it then. We're live on air. Come on. It's not recording.
Can I just say?
Yeah.
You might need to rejig the team shape to give this guy just legs beside him.
Yeah, that's okay. Right, okay. That's interesting. Front two, obviously.
Okay. But the moaner says, I want Michael Carrick in over Dyer and Henderson any day. I think there's an argument.
No.
What? No, I'm going to shoot that argument down. But I'm a fan of Carrick, but unfortunately, his mobility hasn't got enough mobility. No,
that's what I'm saying. You might need someone with him.
No, I wouldn't have that either.
Is Dyer good enough on the ball?
Yeah. I don't think he is.
I
personally don't think so. I don't like Dyer. I think Dyer gets caught out. Kenny spoke about his defensive qualities. I think he gets caught out. I think he's one of those players that doesn't see things around him. He's almost like that player that's constantly just looking forward. Yeah. And I see runners sometimes when you're saying, and because Tottenham play so compact and they really get caught out, I think he gets caught out when Tottenham are open and expansive. I don't see it from him.
5 years ago, you'd have Carrick in there.
Oh my God. Okay, let me rip this up and we'll go back. I'll go back 5 years. Have you got a TARDIS close to the
but
studio?
You would, though.
I
presume if you could get Carrick 5 years ago.
Let's go back 10 years and let's start the argument again.
But it's just, we're talking about Carrick. So would you...
Any type of parameters at all to this conversation? You know what I mean, Kev?
I know what you're saying, Kendo.
But you would, though, wouldn't you?
Let's move on, Kev. Let's move on.
It doesn't mean you're wrong, but on the Carrick point, it's just his mobility. Otherwise, I think you'd have
him
there.
I think so. And that's,
Grant, that's all I wanted from you.
Yeah, mobility, Grant. Yeah. But obviously, it's handy if you can run over 10 yards in the modern game.
Graeme Coughlin on Twitter wants the Captain's Challenge podcasted between you and O'Driscoll. He enjoyed it that much. That was radio gold.
The only reason I agreed to that was that if you wanted to obviously repeat it, it would need my written permission, which you're not going to get.
No, I appreciate that.
And it'd probably be a better standard of questions. It probably needs a little bit more thought behind those questions.
Any kind of thought, Kevin.
It's still
a better end product.
Stop now, come on, it was good. It's still nil all between Barcelona and Juve. It's still 2-1 Monaco against Dortmund, and you're liking a change.
I'm loving this change. Barzagli, talk about shutting up shop.
Do you think it's for your man, Dani Alves?
This man would have been on the pitch at the start of the game for me, Barzagli.
So he's coming on to see this one out.
I've been trying to keep me on this game above those, though, because you cannot. There's just chance after chance, and Monaco are getting chances now because Dortmund are having to go for it, but they're going to have to try and get goals.
Yeah, there's more goals coming.
And Monaco with Mbappe, he's got in behind three or four times just with the space that Dortmund are leaving.
It's torn into basket. That ain't football, is it?
No,
that's not football.
Look, you got Juve shutting up shop. You'll enjoy that.
NBA, that's NBA.
Manchester United against Chelsea. So this is suddenly getting interesting, the title race. The big talking point, or one of the more interesting aspects of the Manchester United ambush of Chelsea, is the Herrera man-marking job on Hazard, which you just don't see very often at all these days. Like, you can almost list off the high-profile man-marking examples in recent years. There's that few of them. Like the Jisung Park and Pirlo one jumped to my mind.
Yeah.
It's just not something you see very often in a Premier League game. You were there.
Premier League game. Dave and I were at the game
Sunday. Did he follow him everywhere?
When he was in possession, Mourinho was screaming at him basically to get rid of the ball as quickly as he could. You could see Mourinho was getting agitated whenever Herrera got onto the ball. So Herrera, of course, was man-marking Hazard. And it was that mentality from Mourinho immediately screaming at him. It was almost frantic from Herrera when he was on the ball. He wanted just to get rid as quickly as he could, the simple pass, whatever it was going to be. And immediately, thought process, where is Hazard? And Kenny and I, again, we spoke about, I don't think Hazard did enough to really cause Herrera too many problems. But invariably, when he did get rid of the ball, Herrera, he was within 10 yards, and it was immediately then back into position, man-man, in behind Hazard, and away you went again from United from an attacking and a defensive point of view.
I will bring in Kenny. Can I ask you, because a few people have made that point about Hazard, even Martin Tyler and Gary Neville were making it in the commentary. They were saying Hazard was not making it difficult enough for Herrera. So what should Hazard do? Where should he take Herrera? Should he do it?
I would have wanted to see him on either wing really wide, and probably where he would probably feel a bit more natural would be on the left-hand side. But I'm thinking, go and hug the touchline. Go and hug that touchline and stay out of the way, because what the position he was playing the position that we've seen him all season. He was almost stood in that position inside left forward position. We know the way that they play Chelsea, the 3-4-3 with those two, Hazard and Pedro, tucked in inside forward, like inside or outside number 10, however you want to maybe say that position. Yeah. If I was him, but I've never really been in that position where I've been man-marked, Kenny, as you know. But I would have liked to have seen him go and play high and wide on the left or the right-hand side and take Herrera in a position that he would be so uncomfortable with, and he wouldn't be able to maybe cope in the position that he gets if he gets in a one-on-one position in that position.
That doesn't sound overly complicated to me here. Hazard might have twigged that at some point, no?
Or Conte. I suppose the information didn't come from the side from Conte. He's got a huge amount of plaudits this season defensively, how he sets his team up tactically, very astute. But I didn't see that kind of information coming from the side.
No,
just
it wasn't,
basically
no.
To say to Hazard, stop running all over the pitch. He's happy to follow you all over the pitch, particularly into those central areas. That's where he's comfortable. You're actually congesting that area, the pitch, that central area, making it more difficult to get the ball. Just go and play as a left winger. Make Andres Herrera play as a left back. Now, the problem with playing an orthodox right back position then for Herrera is he can't just man mark Hazard. He's got a positional responsibility playing now as an orthodox right back with probably Valencia in front of him. So he's got to get a little bit 5-10 yards closer to his centre half. He can't allow players to run on his inside. So now he's got to adjust his position in terms to where the ball is when you play as a right back. So that opens up space now for Hazard to receive the ball in that wide left position. He gets turned and gets running at you. Herrera's banging trouble. So that was a problem. It was interesting what Kev's saying. The problem when you're man-marked, and actually I man-marked 3 times in my career at Wimbledon in the space of about 6 weeks.
Anyone we know?
Steve McManam at Liverpool, Jorginho at Middlesbrough, and Kincladze at Manchester City.
Right.
We were struggling, we needed points, whatever, and manager, they were players.
I just want to stop you there. So McManaman would have been obviously more of a natural winger, more of a number 10 at times. Kincladze, the one that stands out to me, because he was a right sider that played, a left footer that played predominantly on the right, coming in like Hazard does from the other side.
Played a lot on the inside, Kev.
So where did you play that day? You were just literally the man to man marking job all over the pitch with him.
Yeah, exactly. But the biggest problem for me came, I kind of spoke to the manager better, was when we won back possession of the ball, and you mentioned a little bit, you referred to it there, Romina, when they won it back and Herrera looking to get himself involved. So I had a conversation with a manager, said, look, if I'm going to mark this fella, I'm absolutely perfectly happy to do it. But I said, when we get the ball, don't expect me to make myself available. When we have the ball, I will have no interest in getting involved. Because if we get the ball and I break 10 yards away to receive the ball as a poor pass, immediately wherever it was, is in space.
I presume that's true of most man markers. That has to be the way.
Yeah, but like you say, we literally haven't seen it. And there was occasions Herrera won it back. Maybe that natural mentality, wants to get on the ball, make a pass, get involved. And that's when really distance was appearing between him and Hazard. So you really have to commit yourself to an in and out possession of the football. So it's just it's a discipline in itself.
Yeah. You need to sacrifice your own game. It must be unbelievably frustrating for the player being man-marked. Like, does McManaman or Jorginho or Kincladze just say, would you ever off?
I think it's just it does. There is an element of frustration too. You're hoping for that. They'll lose concentration. Yeah. They'll make poor decisions. They might even kind of lash out to a certain extent. And it's not a case, I wasn't the greatest athlete in the world. I wasn't the particularly quickest or anything like that. And sometimes it's not always about having to make tackles time and time again. It's just by virtue of the fact you're actually touched tight on occasions. That'll dissuade the pass. The ball won't even arrive to him. even when he gets the ball, making sure his first touch is backwards. Maybe someone else will come and double up at you. You know, he can't get turned and run at you. You're just reducing his, trying to reduce his influence on the game. And there's a certain element of discipline too. You can't be reckless, commit tackles, get a yellow card, then you're kind of really struggling. So there is a kind of discipline to it. But
did any of those players drag you into position, perhaps maybe go and say, I'll tell you what, go and receive the ball from the left back, take you into central areas, take you... Maybe
Central areas weren't a problem. Probably more so in the wide areas, because if you had two orthodox fullbacks in the team, and he went and played, Magaman say he went and played right wing, and I literally went and then stood on my left back's toes. So what's going to happen then? You know, then left back then might have to readjust his position, might have to play 10 yards in front of me. You almost have to speak about, you have to anticipate these kind of situations arising during the game. Yeah. But the best man marker is one who operates in those middle areas, and that kind of suited Manchester United for me, because they had Fellaini and Pogba in those central areas. When Herrera went in, he complimented the two who were in there. When he vacated that area, they'd still had a natural base there with Pogba and Fellaini. They had the back four intact in behind. And the little surprise for me was, because United opened themselves up on the right hand side when Herrera went drifting across the pitch. It was only Valencia in the right back position. They weren't playing an orthodox right winger, because they kept Lingard and Rashford high up the pitch. Would have been easy to drop Lingard into that orthodox right wing position, keep two banks of four and Rashford high up the pitch, but they didn't. They opened themselves up a little bit down their right hand side, but Chelsea really didn't take advantage of. Alonso didn't make the start.
I just want to make one more point on the man-to-man marking there, Kinney. So the positions you were taking up and everything, how many days work on the training ground did you do prior to that? Was it a one day thing?
Before the game, late in the day, probably Thursday or Friday, this is what I'm thinking of doing, a quick chit chat.
Who was the manager who did
that? Joe Kinnear was the manager. It worked okay. The interesting one for me was the Middlesbrough game. Jorginho actually scored, and I vaguely remember the situation, the kind of play building up, me, Mark and Jorginho, and the picture changing. One of Jorginho's teammates getting space in and around their box, and I'm the closest defender. Now in that situation, you have a decision to make. Where's the greatest danger? You have to leave your man on occasion and go and address the biggest danger. By doing that, you leave your man free. I think they eventually worked the ball to him, he scored. So it can't be the case. It's not as simple as stay with him all over the pitch. You can't allow players to run past you in more threatening positions. So there's a bit of common sense to it as well. Like I said, just a bit of discipline and just a bit of intelligence as well, in terms of your decision making has to be spot on.
And what about McManaman? Patrick?
You got to move to Real, I think, off the back of that. Yeah, exactly. I quite enjoyed it, to be honest with you. I must admit, I felt it was a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah, it's great.
And I kind of sacrificed. Look, I wasn't contributing a huge amount from attacking sense from the team. And I felt if we're both nullified from the game, my attitude was, well, we've won. Yeah. You know, we're in the van. Yeah. They tried that at Stamford Bridge to a certain extent, United. And it was Phil Jones who was delegated to a point trying to get Hazard, but he didn't totally commit himself to it.
Yeah, it wasn't like that.
It was half-hearted, and when Hazard drifted across the pitch, he let him go. It wasn't good enough, but at least this time Herrera totally committed himself to it. But it wasn't just that, there was other aspects of the performance for me, Joe, that committing two players high up the pitch.
I know you and think
getting,
that,
Kev. Yeah, getting at the soft centre of that Chelsea team, the centre of that defence, David Luiz in particular, was absolutely key. The more teams that can do that between now and the end of the season will expose the frailties in David Luiz's game that are still there.
That's the big point that's probably ongoing now with Chelsea. Have we seen Chelsea now look a bit more vulnerable? We looked at this FA Cup tie this weekend. What are Tottenham going to do to them in the FA Cup? I think Tottenham will win the game, actually. I think Tottenham will go right up against them. I think they'll win the game.
I remember a wager here a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Joe, do you?
I'm changed now, I'm changed. But another point to that as well, with how they went about it, is what teams will do ongoing now. What are teams going to do? Are they going to go man for man? Are they going to then play two up front against Chelsea? We may see a different side to how other sides approach this, but
certainty.
No, but I'm talking about Everton. I'm talking about Everton, how Everton go about it. That's probably the only tricky game they've got really now in the league. It's that game at Goodison Park.
But I don't necessarily think teams will play two up front. I can't see kind of Everton. Certainly Spurs won't change their formation. Kane up the front, Dele Alli off, Eriksen and Son off the side. It's not much will change. But they'll know, if you can get through that defensive shield in front of David Luiz, Matic and Kante, and that's easier said than done. That's not easy. Easy to say, oh, just play behind. And when Chelsea are sitting deep on the edge of their box, close to the box, no space in behind, that was just like a brick wall in front of them.
Yeah.
I thought Azpilicueta was a miss alongside David Luiz. I thought that exposed David Luiz as well. Kurt Zouma again wasn't quite switched on. So that kind of protection which David Luiz has got all season, and people have been talking him up as this, oh, this is outstanding player of the year, for me, never has stood up. As soon as you get through those two centre midfielders and get at him, he's still making the same kind of blinkered rash decisions from a defensive point of view that he has been all his career. It's just the defensive setup has been so good around them, teams haven't been able to get at him and expose it. But United did it the weekend, and Spurs might well do the same Sunday.
Gareth Crooks said it was Herrera's dominance over Hazard that set the tone for United's victory. Not since Italian defender Claudio Gentile outwitted Brazilian legend Zico at the 1982 World Cup have I seen a marker nullify a top class player so completely.
Well, we know now that's out the window because Kenny Cunningham's done it. So, but I did say the weekend, and we probably need to stress this as well, Joe, that you and I were talking before the game. I thought it was more of a negative mindset for Mourinho that was going to try and stifle the game. I wondered how he was going to actually set up. Was it going to be more of a 4-5-1, try and stop Chelsea? Just signal of intent was basically to play for the draw. So you and I got a bit of grief over that to say, look, anti-Man United. It was nothing like that of the sort. We give United a lot of credit post-match with what they did through the game. I was really impressed with what Mourinho did, really impressed with United. I think that man-for-man marking job, going back to it though as well, it was the first time I'd seen it so blatant. I don't know. I can't remember seeing it in the Premier League.
It's not a template.
Someone says here, I remember Nigel Rio-Coker man-marking Stephen Gerrard in that FA Cup final, had him in his pocket for the whole game, but let him slip in the last minute. Stevie hit that screamer of an equaliser.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
So, well, it's happened here and there.
Concentration levels every time, yeah. It's not a template for Manchester United. That was quite one night only.
Yeah, exactly. You know? It's not like they can go out and play that way next week.
The bigger issue was the two up front, and I've probably made this point quite some time. For me, that Manchester United team at the moment, you've got the strengths of that Manchester United team are in possession of football. Their strengths are high up the pitch in terms of quality of players.
Sorry, Kent. That's it now. Game over. Valérie Germain with the third goal for Monaco. Dortmund giving the ball away. Breakaway again for Monaco. Just the pace.
Yeah.
Deflection on the cross before it's come through to Germain, and it's 3-1. Yeah. Game over. That's it now.
Yeah. Still nil all at the Nou Camp, so that's also game over. Juventus have done exactly what they were hoping to do. 4 minutes to go there. There are 9 minutes to go in Monaco because that game started late, but it's 6-3 in aggregate. Just one last point because I have to go to ads. Are you honestly worried about Chelsea now if people start throwing two up top at them and getting after them? And, you know, they're still human. They might wobble, or do you think they're just...
I think they are wobbling.
Yeah.
Do you think two defeats in the last three games. I think that soft centre has been exposed. I don't think they're actually going to crumble.
Mm. Okay.
I think get one or two of those key players back. I still think they'll league points between now and the end of the season.
Yeah.
Just whether Spurs can continue on that run and just keep posting back to back victories. It's possible.
We'll take a short break. We'll chat to the lads about McCarthy's Park, France 98. This was a documentary which Kev.
Brilliant documentary.
Popped up on your Twitter feed recently. It's really good.
Yeah, so, I've got to give it. Yeah, it was Kieran O'Reilly that sent it to me on Twitter.
Yeah.
And brilliant. And honestly, I didn't know it was being filmed at the time when I was part of that squad. Kenny was in the squad as well with us, and yeah, really in depth, brilliant stuff. Actually,
yeah, it was. It followed Mick McCarthy, obviously taking over from Jack and managing Ireland across the France 98 qualifiers. And it seemed to be, I mean, none of the players were really involved, but it was Mick all the way through. So the two lads were obviously there and involved. We're going to play a few clips from the documentary next and get some of the lads' memories of it.
Off the ball, thanks to Air.
Munster have made it to the semi-final of the European Rugby Champions Cup. Available to watch live exclusively on the Air Sport Pack.
The love just won't stop flowing in for Kenny C.
Got a couple of tweets sent in here now. One from @CarolSmurf. You actually predicted that one, didn't you? Please, can you have Kenny on every night? Grumpiest, crankiest, loveliest human ever. Little smiley face as well, Kendo.
That's a win-win-win.
There's probably one little question that come in early for me. This is from Shay Moose. I thought this was actually Nathan that was tweeting in earlier, actually. Thoughts on mobile phone bans or mobile video bans in team dressing rooms? Shouldn't the bonding and the sanctity be private?
Absolutely.
Thoughts on that yet?
Yeah, I nearly threw that one in earlier. I didn't. I was talking it to death, but I agree with that. Absolutely.
No mobile phones in the dressing rooms, no photographs, no videos coming out.
I'd have no earphones. I think visually, look, players coming off the coach, those big speakers around their necks, for me, it's all wrong. As soon as you step off that coach, you're in match mode. The focus should be on what's coming down.
They could be listening to
R. Kelly or whatever.
Laura Kelly, obviously, you're going to win the argument. Yeah. They could be listening to
any kind
of music to get them in the zone.
I've seen players with those on their heads in the dressing room. Like, we have people changing in the dressing room, still got those, and the dressing room's quiet. I experienced that the last couple of years in football.
Jim McGuinness up at Celtic, he's doing motivational podcast, what you said, but certainly motivational things for lads so they can listen to when they're on the team bus, when they're going to games, in the dressing room before the games. So no,
on the bus for me, when you get off the bus, that's it. I think players should be interacting in the dressing room. I want to hear people being vocal, speaking to each other in terms of what is expected of each other, the man of each other in terms of...
I agree that interaction has to be there.
What if they're listening to something like Jim McGuinness has recorded, some last minute words of advice, stuff to get them in the zone?
That's fair enough, but I still got a bit... lads now, a lot of lads literally sit from the moment they get off the bus, headphones on. Do not take those headphones off till they go out for the warm up, come back in, maybe go back on again. There's no interaction. There's no communication between the players.
It's almost like a fashion thing now, Kevin. Yeah, isn't it? Do they actually listen to those things? You know, it's as if I have the latest gadget. It looks the part. You know what I mean? In terms of how I'm styling yourself up, like, you know, before the game. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Not a fan.
I wouldn't have it.
It's the new generation, Kenny, and they're here to stay.
Not taking the bait.
McCarthy's Park, France 98, that documentary you mentioned. We'll tweet a link out to it. It was an RTE production back in, well, I guess 1998, funny enough. And interestingly, so cameras follow Mick McCarthy around. They get good access. They're in his hotel room on match day. They're chatting to him in the dressing room at certain points. They're chatting to him on the bus.
The bus?
The training ground.
I was never aware of that.
On a flight. Do you know what? You pop up, actually. People watch the documentary.
Yeah, you're on it.
No, there's a great moment, right? There's a great moment. I'm just glad this has come back to me now. There is a great moment where the camera is going back through the aisle in the plane. And you say something to one of the attendants who has the trolley.
Must have been a food related issue.
You ask the lady something, and she gives you your answer, and you just turn away and go, "Oh."
By the grumble, is that what you're saying?
Absolute grumble. I don't know what you asked her for, but it's there caught in camera. It's brilliant. Yeah.
Probably too much of the Porsches were too much of a fan of the team over the years, definitely worth a watch.
No, it's good. So we've got some clips for you. To remind you of, you were both involved, to remind you of the how it all went. 5-0 win away to Liechtenstein, then beat Macedonia 3-0, a draw at home to Iceland. The Macedonia 3-2 win in Macedonia is there. There were other good results then, 5-0 over Liechtenstein, 0-0 with Lithuania at home. And then the crunch.
That's a bad result. 0-0 with Lithuania at home,
yeah,
really?
Yeah. But then the crunch.
Remember that one.
The crunch 2 weeks was away to Iceland, you beat them 4-2. And then you beat Lithuania a few days later, 2-1 away. They were the two big ones. And then you drew 1-1 with Romania, but that was redundant result. That didn't count. So it was the 6 points you got away to Iceland and Lithuania.
Big night, that Iceland game. Big afternoon. Here we go.
Go on, Kev.
Which got you into the playoff against Belgium. Why was the Iceland? Was that the day of Diana's funeral?
It was, yeah, but there was something even bigger happened that day.
Okay.
Yeah, I made my international debut. Yeah.
Joe, you knew what was coming there.
Well, actually, Kev, stick on your headphones.
Stop trying to ingratiate yourself to Kev. You've slaughtered him already this evening. I'm trying to make it
Joel
up.
Joe knows nothing. Joe knows nothing, honestly.
Stick on your headphones.
I still think of Joe's amazement when he actually saw me playing in the West Brom shirt earlier on.
Oh, dear. There's a great...
We'll just say as well that Barcelona are out. 3-0, the game's finished. Juve through to the next round, yet.
Great moment where Mick goes to watch a young Kevin Kilbane playing for West Brom. You know, he's checking out the new talent. So Kev gets a shout out from the documentary, although it's fair to say maybe the Irish public and the documentary makers weren't too familiar with him.
A 240-mile round trip takes McCarthy to the Hawthorns in West Bromwich, Birmingham. A young player, Kevin Kilbane, makes the long journey worthwhile.
Kevin Kilbane!
It's not actually true, and I have to say this, but I've got real grievances with the documentary makers, because I was actually, before that game was played, I was in the Irish squad anyway. Mm. So I was called into the Irish squad my last ever game for Preston North End, and I was in the squad prior to the start of that season. So that's not necessarily true. That
don't ruin a good documentary.
Yeah, well there you go.
I tell you what, the footage of you that day for West Brom, class.
That was me, Joe, man.
Absolutely class.
What was class exactly?
Come on,
Devil's advocate.
He was weaving around players. He was playing 1-2s edge of the box, feeding the ball to the fullback on the overlap.
The opposition fullback. Joe, that's poor.
Your moment is in, Kenny. Your moment's in. What age were you in this campaign? 97, 98?
I was 20. So 25.
I'm just trying to do the math.
24, 25.
No, I'm 71, so Brian said I'm 39 now, so
picture the scene here. So a match has happened. You've got Mick McCarthy and Paddy Bonner, who I'd forgotten was, I didn't know he was part of the he's part of the backroom team.
Well, goalkeeper coach would have been.
So they're all sitting back at the hotel after one of the games, and they're having a drink and they're watching the match back, and and Kenny Cunningham pops up on the screen, and then
on the screen, well, was I playing?
Yeah,
that would be highly unusual, would have.
Yeah, yeah, but no, no, but just have a listen. So they're about to analyse your performance.
Okay. Oh, right.
Here it is. Look, when we slaughtered him at his Barney, then he gets highlighted. Well, and look at his Barney, yeah.
the Barnet
fair shoes. The alternative Yorkshire rhyming song.
Oh, there you go, Kev.
That's just ridiculous. Highlight, yeah. Kev.
I know.
Can you envision me going into a barber's, let alone a hairdresser's, and asking for a highlight? Come on. Back me up here, Kev.
I keep getting told I've dyed my hair, Kev. Imagine me going to get my hair.
I'm wearing Towieland at the moment, but even now.
Look, it's funny. It's not a big deal.
I agree.
No, Kenny would have.
Kev clearly wasn't embarrassed like into that, man.
Kenny's cool.
That never happened.
Look. This is what the documentary said, so I have to go with the documentary.
If that's all Mick could pick out in terms of criticism, I'll accept that.
You'd obviously play well. One of the more amazing scenes in it is the relationship McCarthy has with the press. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, were you aware of this?
I understood that Mick would have had grievances because he would have mentioned a few things here and there, but nothing. I didn't know the extent of every press conference. It was, we've seen Martin O'Neill get quite tetchy with one or two of the journalists, and be quite forceful at times, but Mick was every bit
firing guns.
He wasn't at the job too often. I would have thought there was still that bit of a honeymoon period, because when he got the job, it was all a good feeling towards Mick generally around where journalists, the football and public, etc., his association with the team. So I didn't think
the documentary was trying to focus on the fact was that Mick had taken this job where he was trying to focus on the youth. He was trying to bring maybe you and Breeny and Dave Connolly and Ian
Robbie
Hart.
Would have been coming in then, would he, Robbie?
Well, not then. It would have been 97. Robbie and Damien would have come in 99, I think.
Oh,
I think
that's the name of
it. So it was well before then, a couple of years before. Gary Kelly would have been another, obviously more established at that time, right. Jason McAtee. But they were trying to focus on the fact that he was trying to maybe move one or two of the older players on.
Yeah, right. And he did say in the documentary he was trying to build a team for the next
10 years.
Yeah, because interestingly, after one of the games, John Aldridge retires in the dressing room. Comes up to Mick after a game at Lansdowne Road. They've lost. It's a big game. They've lost at home. And Aldridge comes up to him and says, "Mick, I've had enough. I'm not getting the game."
Do you know what I think was? I think it was the home draw with Lithuania.
That's right.
I think it was a Lithuania draw.
And
yeah,
you had to put on your dicky bow and suits because you had some function to go to. And Mick was saying he was disappointed with the result, getting dressed. And Aldridge comes up to him and says, "I'm gone." But on the media thing, right? It's a theme throughout the whole documentary.
That might be individuals. Maybe had a problem one or two. Well, here's the media per se. I'd be very surprised if that's the case.
Yeah, no, okay, but so. I take your point. It's the RTE panel. He's got a real problem with.
And yeah, it's different, yeah.
But there's an amazing moment in the documentary, which we're going to play you now. And Jim Beglin has been asked by RTE to interview Mick. And the documentary makers capture Mick basically telling Beglin he's not talking to him. Like, he'll talk to him on air to the Irish people, but he's like, "You've made your bed." You'll hear the clip now. So this starts off with Mick talking about his relationship with ex-players in the media, and then at the end of it you're going to hear, just picture the scene, Beglin is waiting for the RTE studio to come to him to interview Mick, and him and Mick get into a conversation. So here's Mick first.
"No, I wouldn't take it from ex-players through the media. Some great players have had a pop, but I still don't, as I said to you before, I still don't respect their opinions. I see it, take it on board. Sometimes I might bring it up, other times I just leave it.
Jim, no particular wish to speak to you. I'll speak to the people at home. Sorry, pal. You've made your bed for me.
Hello, Mike, we are ready to go.
Maybe you and I'll speak at another time when you're not congratulating me on a victory, then.
Fair enough. Fire away. Well, Mike.
So they had a sort of subtitle, but he was saying things like, "You've made your bed, you've had a pop," all this kind of stuff. It's terrible, really. And then, and I'll get your thoughts on it. The other thing then is, after that famous Lithuania away result, the one which means you're in the playoff against Belgium,
Mick's walking off the pitch with Mick Byrne, and one of the first things he wants to know is who are the RTE panel tonight, as you can hear.
Is it Beglin? What was it? Is it Beglin and Giles?
Yeah.
Outside.
Six fucking points on the road.
Yes.
What about it?
And he's like, he's pumping the air. Beglin and Giles, have some of that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think people forget. I think Mick was still a relatively inexperienced manager at stage when he took the job. I hadn't spent a lot of time in club football, only a couple of years at Millwall where I worked underneath him. So I think Mick would probably admit at that stage his managerial career was still probably feisty.
I would say, though, as well, though, Ken, he would have had a lot of local journalists. Very, very few times Millwall would have been getting the serious national press that would have been down to probably focus on Millwall.
Yeah, without a doubt, in terms of his profile and certain pressures in terms of expectation within the squad. Yeah, so, and yeah, like I said, I think Mick now is a different type of manager than when he was back in the day. I see Mick now a lot more calm and controlled on the touchline, but kind of comes with experience to a certain extent. But at the time, we remember Mick, that kind of real kind of feisty, still had that kind of almost player persona about him, even as with his manager's hat on, you know what I mean? So that kind of physical confrontation and, you know, kind of mad eyes on occasion, like, you know. So maybe Mick will look back at that and think, in hindsight, maybe he could have handled the situation a little bit differently. I'm not sure the history of him and Jim. Jim now, obviously, we've worked with Jim, Kevin. He's kind of very affable now. He's the co-coms, very well spoke, you know, very thoughtful and incisive in terms of what he has to say. But I'm not exactly sure of the history around that. But interesting insight, like you said, Jim. I mean, I wasn't even aware of that at all.
That documentary has been made.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know the documentary had been made. I saw some of the footage. There's lots of us between the game. We said I only came in for the Iceland game, my first squad, but between the Iceland and Lithuania game where we flew out of Iceland into Lithuania. So there's great footage of Johnny Fallon coaching, refereeing the little five-a-side game that we've had mixed playing in the game.
Is he the fella that Jason McAteer is giving?
Yeah.
Dog's abuse.
Yeah, so Johnny's getting abused by everyone on the pitch because he's making the wrong decisions, and Shea's having a pop at him saying, because we didn't have goals, so we would have had two like poles in the ground, right. And Shea's saying the ball's well over, and these sort of arguments are going on, and Johnny's trying to back himself up.
That was a poison challenge, being a referee, and that was for the side game.
I have to say,
nobody wanted that.
It looked like a lot of fun. You look like a happy camp.
I'll tell you what was a happy camp after that Lithuania. I don't remember the game. I don't remember quite a few of those games, but I actually remember, it just sprung to my mind, you know, the hotel, Kev, we stayed in Lithuania. Was that the...
That's Gary Kelly.
Yeah. I remember we had a great kind of night back at the hotel. Gaz Kelly was in great form.
What does Gaz Kelly in great form entail?
Well, Gary... we're talking a little bit. Gary Kelly was one end of the hotel that was kind of... There was like this,
like a hollow shell to the hotel. Yeah, two floors, one of the holes.
A new hotel, but there was what do you say at the end? Like a big tree with like branches and things out of it as
exactly.
well.
But
it was in with the wall, and Gary Kelly was climbing up the wall, climbing up these trees, pretending to be a monkey at the top of this tree. Now, he's like 30, 40 feet up, whatever it would be at one stage, hanging off the rafters, basically to keep us occupied. This was kind of the theme of it because we'd been away at that stage for about a week or so, hadn't we?
So that
was a good 2 week trip. So Gary Kelly would have kept us occupied
as well. Yeah.
Didn't Gary Kelly famously at the O2 World Cup organise the horse drawing competition?
Horse drawing competition.
What's that?
It's in Niall Quinn's book.
It has to be true then. God forbid somebody embellished the story.
Is there not,
for the purpose of
I don't know, I have to read that one.
Autobiography.
Was there not? Did you not in Saipan have some kind of? You were out on a few drinks, messing around, and you did a horse drawing competition, like a horse, like the animal horse. We got that completely wrong.
We drew like paints came out, like arts and crafts.
Arts and crafts, yeah. It was a competition. Does that ring a bell? No,
it doesn't ring a bell to me.
Okay.
Yeah. Ask Quinny.
I must have had an alcoholic drink that night for the first time. I don't remember that.
Niall Quinn's in studio tomorrow, so.
Oh, yeah. Put him on the spot.
Yeah, no, that night I remember playing darts in Saipan. We were playing darts and playing pool in Saipan. That's what I remember from that night out we had there, yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
A few things from Saipan spring to mind, to be honest. Yeah.
Sure.
Let's do that.
Let's do it. Once and for all, let's do it.
We're definitely not going to do that.
No, I didn't think so.
I was done to death.
Did you mind, you know, being teetotal, being out with the lads when they're on the lash, or was it good crack?
Oh, no, I loved it. It was great crack.
Did you?
Oh, watching the lads deteriorate as the night went on. I was absolutely having a bird's eye view of it. Kev in particular. Funny drunk Kev. Funny drunk. When those people makes you laugh.
Was Kenny the next day reminding everyone what had happened.
One of them
to rub people's noses in a joke.
If one of the stories came up, Kenny would just sit there laughing to himself, just laughing, because he would have seen it all. So,
well, it was great, because for me, like, in terms of the best position of all, because in terms of memories that you have being out, like, we had a few good nights out, we enjoyed each other's company, and that's a big part of it for me in terms of the interaction, camaraderie between the players. But yeah, I used to feel sorry for the lads. Lads had a few drinks, and the old memory's just not there. Like, and I'm like, lads, it was hilarious. Come on, it was brilliant.
That's a bullying, Kenny. Come on.
Talk about Gaz Kelly. I'll tell you a Will story about him. I used to hoard out a car. Clearly, I didn't drive, so I was the one. Yeah, let's get a car. Kenny'll drive it. Shock. So I get a little Cinquento I used to get, like, cheap rate at the airport. We ended out in Malahide. Gibney's out in Malahide, wasn't it? Made the worst mistake. We had a few drinks. Let's get back to the hotel, lads. Come on, curfew off. We got another lads a few drinks. Oh, come on, we have another hour. Let's shoot. Come on, Kenny. No, lads. All right, let's go back to home. Jump in the cab, lads. I say, I've got the car here. Gaz Kelly. I'll jump in the back. Like, a couple of us jump in the back. All right, Gaz, jump in the back. Jumps into the back seat behind me. So I start driving the coast road from Malahide out to Portmarnock.
Oh, yeah.
You know how dark that is?
Yeah.
That is literally the coast road, isn't it? That's the
sea
there on your left-hand side. Yeah. So as I'm driving, suddenly me seat is reclining backwards. Gaz is reclining the seat, like pinning me back and like pulling me back slowly. My headrest came out. That got flung out the car window. So I'm almost like in a vertical position, staring up the sunroof at the stars by driving about 30 miles an hour at one stage.
Not working your core to sit up, Kenny. You're in your stronger core.
I'll be honest with you, I was sweating. You couldn't talk to Gaz. You know what Gaz is like? You couldn't talk to him.
Yeah.
Had to put the brakes on, throw him out of the car. It was ridiculous.
Did you literally throw him out the car?
I possibly did physically throw.
And was he doing hands over the eyes?
Oh, hands over the eyes. I was literally reclining the seat. I was literally going backwards, pulling the seatbelt, literally pinning me to it, pulling me back at the same time.
That was the wrong group to be designated driver with.
Bad group.
Yeah.
Bad group.
That's trouble.
Kev wasn't in the car then. I know he would have bailed me out.
No Tom Nunn this evening. Richie.
Hell yeah.
Double job. Follow this lad.
Oh, Richie.
I don't think I can.
Richie, what are you playing tonight?
What am I playing tonight? Bit of Bell X1, bit of Prince, bit of the Bangles.
Can you give Kenny your request? What do you want, Kenny?
Kenny, what do you want to hear tonight?
Crack is 90.
Tunes, what? Oh, God. Come on. I know, but like, come on.
What do you want? Well, if you're in the taxi home,
do you know what I struggle now with the lads in the dressing room? It used to be, when I got to a certain 30s plus, the old, somebody got me an iPod. Was it an iPod? The old, not the music.
Are you serious?
Kenny,
am I right?
Come on, Kenny.
Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. Those little music things.
I'll tell you what Kenny did introduce me to. I will say this though. Kenny introduced me to the Kings of Leon. First album, Kings of Leon. Kenny introduced me to the Kings of Leon.
So we the lads.
Great album.
Do you know your music?
No, this is my point. I did know my music.
Yeah.
But at Birmingham, funny enough, Kings of Leon, Damien Johnson, like a player there, he's coach up at Blackburn now, loved his music.
Right.
Bang, used to look after me. Used to put the tunes on me iPod. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Kings of Leon, I recommended it. Went down
after the second album, but Kenny introduced me to the first album, The Kings of Leon, and I listened to it. Was like, yeah, I'm having
that's
that.
But now, agree on, Kev. Second album, then downhill. Thank you.
Can we have some Kings of Leon tonight?
Bit of Kings of Leon, bring back some memories.
Yeah, okay. I tell you what, you play.
All suggestions are welcome, by the way, because I'm doing this very last minute. So if you're coming up with Anthony, it's more than welcome.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'll get one for you now. Kings of Leon. Molly's Chambers, a great tune, but no, I don't want Molly's Chambers.
I like the bucket. I want a bit of Cranberries as well. That early album was a fourth, second album.
Everybody else is doing this, why can't we?
Phenomenal. I don't know what it was. A few tunes on that.
I'll just take a break. We'll pick this right up.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by Air Sport.
Oh, we're pretty much done. We've 3 minutes. I just want to say before we get caught time wise, and I have to wrap suddenly at the end, this has been one of my favourite days at work, Kenny.
Yeah.
You've been an absolute joy to me.
Always away.
I've never laughed so much.
So it's always
had an absolute great time. You're a special person.
That could be taken both ways.
You're a special man, Kenny.
Yeah, like I said, if you're taken both ways.
Kenny was singing Cranberries during the outbreak there.
Yeah, I remember the song.
Go on.
No need to argue.
Sing it again.
Just give us a...
The environment, the ambiance is not right. We've got to get back up to Gibney's again.
Yeah, all right. We'll
do it. After about 3 points of Guinness.
Just a little... Come on, there's no
need to argue anymore. That's a great song. That's a great album.
You have another tweet in for Kenny. If we set you up on Twitter, would you...
No.
No,
100%.
That was a, yeah, that was one that was put to me. Would any, would Kenny join social media? Would he, right, would no, he no, join no, Twitter I, and like that? No, but he said no. We do have a tweet from CRKC_Liam.
Oh yeah.
It basically says sign Kenny now, capital letters, exclamation mark, sign Kenny now. But just wondering, who was Kenny's least favourite teammate? Current pundit and
present
player.
Company included or excluded? Hey.
So who was your least favorite teammate?
That's a terrible
current
question.
Pundit
can't,
and player.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
Well, all right.
Happen,
well, there
no.
you go.
We look.
I'm so affable. You know what I mean? Just got on with everybody's
job.
You know
we stooped low enough with the wives question earlier.
Oh, yeah, that was a low point of the show. I must admit, a low point.
He's still not happy about that.
Yeah, people. Certainly, there was players. You don't have a natural chemistry, Kev. You know what I mean? But it's all about the group. It's all about the group dynamics. Somehow you have to make it work. You know, you can't separate people from the group, even yourself. It just doesn't work. Any kind of team sport, people know
even
that.
Even
me,
so. You wanted to separate me then. It was, yeah.
Did you two have a room together?
Oh, no, it's very nice.
No, I don't think we room. No, I didn't room with Kenny, no. But Kenny was the quiz master, you know that. So Kenny used to always bring
exactly.
the board games.
Exactly, that's why I'm so critical of you.
Yeah. Kenny used to set the questions.
Put on a quiz
and
show earlier.
Yeah. So,
because
yeah.
my standards were so high, Kev.
Yeah,
back
he was,
me up on
yeah,
that.
He was. Kenny was
even if Roy took me to pieces in his book about it, yeah. in terms of being the quiz master.
Yeah, Kenny was very good.
What did Roy say about you?
Did he?
Did Roy take you to pieces?
I don't know if he did, to be fair, yeah.
Did he?
To be fair.
What did
yeah,
he say?
Yeah. I don't know.
That you were crap.
I didn't read the book, to be honest with you. Obviously, read an extract or someone threw it.
And he said you were a rubbish quizmaster.
To be fair to Roy, a bit of tongue in cheek, but a bit of truth to it, but take with a pinch of salt.
And what was the line? Of 30 seconds, come on.
No, I don't remember. Like I said, I haven't read it. You know, it's just something which was thrown at me. Something about probably quizmaster and busy around the hotel, collecting money for the hotel staff. More interesting.
Kenny,
collecting
Kenny
money
used to
for
go
the hotel
every
staff.
Trip we're in. It, Kenny would say, fiver for the bus driver, fiver for the.
Ah, that's just, class.
We built houses for people with those whip browns we used to have.
It was good.
The places we used to go.
It was good. Yeah,
that's a touch
communities.
Class out of him.
Captain, social housing. Good we captain. Started that social housing craze in Eastern Europe. The money we gave away.
We've got to go. Yeah. Thank you as always.
Well done, Joseph.
And Kenny Cunningham. Well what done, a joy.
Yeah.
Top man. Nice. Good luck. Give my ball any out of grass. I'll give you a move for the perfect pass.